For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, my name is Aishin, or Nancy, and I'm really pleased to be here and able to talk to you today. I'm going to be talking about the practice of vow, and that comes out of the 10 paramitas that we are many people here are studying as part of being part of the 8-week practice commitment period. But I know that we have a couple people who are joining us for just the first time, and welcome. It's wonderful to have you here as well. And in fact, this is why I'm so happy to be talking about vow, because I think vow applies to, you know, for sure it applies to taking the practice commitment period. I mean, it is a way, a part of a commitment, but it also has to do with just being here today at all, you know, making a decision to come here in particular and do something in particular and apply ourselves. And I will try to touch on different aspects of vow, including, you know, spiritual practice as vow, but I also want to talk about the way that vow in particular relates to all the other paramitas. And just my own sake of remembering, I'll mention all 10. There are generosity, patience, ethical conduct, effort, meditation, wisdom, skillful means, vow, powers, and knowledge. And all of these are practices that we can take on individually, and I know that people in the practice commitment period have taken on one of those to work with yourself and get to know better. And and the one I happened to choose was vow. So I have been thinking a lot about what vow means in all different kinds of ways. So a vow, really, you know, it's for sure a decision. And you know, everything that we have ever done or ever will do comes out of some kind of decision that we've made, whether we are, you know, aware of that, or there are decisions that we're not so aware of or more unconscious of. But or you know, a vow is also, it's a concept or a thought or an idea, but it also involves, you know, maybe more than just sort of a momentary decision. It is a sort of a more of a resolution or a decision that we maybe commit to for at least a period of time and commit to kind of working with. And so there are a couple of passages from Dogen, the founder of our school of Soto Zen in the 13th century Japan. These come from Genjo Koan, and I'm going to read them before I start talking, just so they're kind of rolling around in your head while I'm talking about different aspects of vow. But I was thinking of, when I thought about, you know, how do we work with the practice of vow, I thought of the line, "To carry yourself forward and experience myriad things is delusion. That myriad things come forth and experience themselves is awakening." That we, you know, a vow can be one aspect of carrying oneself forward. You know, we sort of make a decision, I will do this. And in this passage, it says it's delusion, and I'm going to address that later. We'll come back to that, but keep it there for now. You know, what is the utility of our vow? The other passage that struck me when talking and thinking about vow is, "When dharma does not fill your whole body and mind, you think it is already sufficient. When dharma fills your body and mind, you understand that something is missing." When we first come to some kind of vow, it's a concept, you know, and it exists actually in the realm of the universal or ultimate. It's kind of a vague thought in our heads. And actually, I think that all the paramitas, when we think about them as, you know, a practice, they exist in the universal, and there's, I'm not sure what to say about this, or ultimate kind of way, but actually, it is in trying to live out our vow or our other practices that we encounter the particular or the phenomenal world, and we have, I think we can sometimes encounter all kinds of difficulties when trying to, you know, live out the great idea of a vow in the, you know, mundane aspects of our lives. So there are lots of different kinds of vows, and they can be, you know, range from sort of profound, life-changing vows. I was thinking about, there was a woman named Peace Pilgrim who lived in the 20th century who, because of a spiritual awakening that she had at about age 45, she decided to just walk. She walked 25,000 miles between 1953 and when she passed away in 1981. And she vowed that she would remain a wanderer until mankind has learned the way of peace. And she kind of walked through all of North America, deciding that she would remain homeless until invited to stay, and she would fast until she was invited to eat. And this was to try to, you know, help people, I think, learn the way of peace or become more peaceful. And she walked preaching sort of this message of peace. So this is kind of a profound vow. But vows can also be very mundane. And I'm actually going to start by talking about a couple of very mundane vows that I myself took as a kid. I think I was about 12. And my vows were, you know, when I was a kid, I actually was very, I would go on these little self-improvement kicks, and I would have these ideas of, like, this is how I'm going to change my life and be a better person. So I happened to, the summer that I turned 12, I was reading something in Reader's Digest, and I read an article that watching TV made you less smart. And so I vowed that I was just not going to watch TV anymore. And I have to qualify this with an apology towards people who do watch TV, because it's not that this is such a great thing to do or this is the way to be. And I don't even think there is really, you know, in the 35 years since I took this vow, I don't think there's really been a lot of, you know, research that really, truly, you know, conclusively demonstrates that watching TV makes you less smart. But I read this, and, you know, I didn't feel so good about myself when I was a kid. And so I was constantly trying to find something that would make me feel, you know, like I was a better person. And so my vow was to not watch TV. And same summer, I also got the idea that it would be a really good idea to get up every day at dawn and go running. And because I read, you know, somewhere else that this was really good for you, this was, you know, this was around the time that running was starting to become a big thing. And so I made this other vow that I was going to get up every morning at dawn and I was going to go running. I thought, you know, okay, I'll run a couple miles, you know, what? No problem. That's what you're supposed to do. And so because you're supposed to do it, I was going to do it. And, you know, my first vow was successful. And I'll go into that in a minute, a bit, because I think it teaches something. It taught me some things about different aspects of vow as a practice. My second vow was unsuccessful, but I actually learned just as much from the complete unsuccessfulness of this vow. I think I got up one morning and decided to go running and was like, No, this is not going to work. This is horrible. But so my first vow, it was successful. I, for the most part, did not watch TV for many decades, actually. And the first thing that strikes, although I do watch TV, you know, and actually there was no period of time where I would, you know, sneak down behind our couch and watch an episode of MASH from time to time because I just couldn't stand it. But the thing about this vow not to watch TV was I think partly it resonated with something about a deep intention that I had, and I can't quite say what that was. But secondly, you know, it was a realistic vow. It was reasonable. It was, I think, appropriate to my, you know, ability to carry it out, first of all. It expressed my intention. It expressed the way I saw myself. I saw myself as a kid who wanted to be smart and wanted to do well in school. That fit with my own self-concept for sure. But I didn't, also get too rigid with it. I didn't let slip-ups ruin my commitment to the vow. I kind of held on to it very lightly. But I also didn't hold on to it so tightly that I just couldn't, function. I found lots of other things to do, which is maybe something that's helpful with a vow not to do something. Vowing not to do something, if you continue to just sit there and white knuckle your way through the vow, whether that's not biting your nails or not drinking alcohol or, you know, all kinds of things that we might vow not to do, if you just can sit there and stick with, you know, thinking about what you're not doing, you really haven't, kind of left that behind. So I was able to find lots of things to do, and that, I think, enabled my vow to come to life through my actions. Now, I also had a friend in high school who was completely hooked on General Hospital and had to watch it every day, had to. And so anytime I wanted to spend time with her, I would, you know, have to, I kind of made a decision that it's like, I'm not going to let this interfere with my friendship. I will watch General Hospital with her. And I did. And so I'm, you know, possibly the other thing that I learned about vow, although I didn't really realize it at the time, is that, it wasn't maybe such a good idea to, you know, kind of define myself as some sort of special person who just won't ever do this. And I guess that was what I chose. You know, I don't really want to say a lot about how I think anyone else should live out a vow, because I think that is such a personal decision, and we're all in our own place with any kind of vow or decision that we make at any time. But those were some things that I learned about how to work with myself. And that is maybe one of the important things about vow. Now, my second vow, to get up every morning and go running, was completely unsuccessful, but it taught me some other really important things about vow. And the one that occurs to me is that, you know, one thing that can arise when we begin to work with a vow is this overwhelming feeling of, this is horrible, I hate it. And it's maybe one of the more, you know, difficult obstacles in trying to figure out, okay, how do I take this, you know, maybe good intention that I have and try to translate it into, you know, the four-dimensional quality of my life. I did not have the maturity to, be able to work with this at all at the time. But it is actually, you know, that kind of feeling coming up of, this is awful, get me out of here, I hate this, is a it can be a major opportunity to study the self. And it's not that we maybe need to, you know, kind of white knuckle our way through that feeling and just say, okay, no, but I made this vow, I'm going to do this, or to, you know, completely give in. But I think that's a little bit about, you know, trying to find what the middle way means in your life, the middle way of practice in anyone's life. Now, that was perhaps not, I guess maybe the other thing that I learned about that particular vow is that particular vow wasn't very important to me. And so it was like, okay, you know, who cares? Who cares if you get up at dawn and go running? But I also, there have been lots of times in life where, you know, I think for all of us, we find vows that really are important to us and that we do have to or want to or choose to hold on to. And one of those is actually, you know, a little bit of a commitment to spiritual practice, whether that is a long-ranging commitment or a commitment to, I'm going to try this and see where we go. It is really something that we're all encountering when we come to a Zen center is, whether or not we're here as part of a long extending commitment or just, I want to see what this is about and check it out and practice. So I think it's, worth, I think, discussing. And I wanted to talk a little bit about how that's worked in my life, and not as sort of the example of how to do it, but just as one person's experience, and I think maybe sometimes very flawed person's experience. But when I first started to practice, I really wanted to do it, and I really wanted to like it. And I can't even say what exactly about it appealed to me, but there was something about Buddhism and about Zen practice that I just really wanted. But I encountered all sorts of obstacles. One was I jumped in too fast and took on too much, and maybe said, okay, I'm going to do this, and suddenly it became like I'm going to do this every day, and I'm going to sit for X amount of time every day. So jumping in too fast, and then which would quickly propel me to jump right back out. I couldn't live up to my own aspirations or expectations, and I would find myself being plagued by all kinds of doubts. I would start to practice or encounter, try to join a practice community, but I would quickly get to that point of, this is horrible, I hate it, or, this is stupid or pointless, or, I think there were times when I felt like, those people are weird, and I can say that now because I'm a card-carrying member of those people, but there were lots of times. There was one time where I threw my Zafu and Zabaton away because I just felt like, no, and I think that comes from the inability that I was having to find some balance of this in my life and find some way to hold that intention and aspiration lightly, but still hold on to it. When my vow of practicing was just a concept, it seemed fine. And, it felt like, well, of course I can do this. And I guess what I quickly found was that self-will, the self-will that maybe carries us forward to experience the myriad things, wasn't working at all. And as I started to try to put that wish to practice into actual lived practice, I began to see some of the many difficulties and qualities in myself that needed to be examined and developed and worked with and changed. For me, coming to practice has been partly a decision, but partly something else helping to carry me forward, some way of learning to relax with this. And so I guess just to go back and again to the line from Genjo Koan, to carry yourself forward and experience the myriad things is delusion. Although it was a perfectly good aspiration, my decision of like, I'm going to do this wasn't quite enough, because I found all these parts of myself that just couldn't quite do that. I've been, Ancient Dragon has been around for almost 9 years, and I've been with Ancient Dragon for almost 9 years, but for the same amount of time prior to that, I was going someplace a few times and saying, okay, this is it, never again, let's, throw away the Zafu, this is horrible, I don't want to do this, but then starting up again and saying, okay, no, I do want to do this, or there were a lot of just stopping and starting, and I can't say that I ever fully, intended to, that the times when I wasn't practicing, I can't say that I ever fully intended to resume, but that is what I want to say about that the myriad things come forth and experience themselves as awakening. I think there was some way in which some part of that vow was working on me from the inside, and so I was able to, kind of somehow it just continued to come up that I do want to do this. I am going to find a way to do this. I'm not always conscious that this is what I want to do, but that's where it was. That many things came forward to help me practice, and you know, there were opportunities and people and all kinds of things to help with that. That weren't always of, you know, my own doing. Things sort of came together in a way that I'm, you know, very, very grateful for, but cannot really take credit for. So one thing that I want to say is, you know, so we can think about vow as something that works from the outside in, where we say, we have a vow and we say, I'm going to do this. And I'm going to, you know, maybe our vow is to help others. And we begin to find ways to do that, whether that's, you know, refraining from harm, practicing generosity, even tough love can be a way to help others, even though it feels, you know, it's an intention to help someone. But our vow can also, you know, begin to subtly transform us from the inside out, where we may find ourselves, you know, engaging in new possibilities that we hadn't previously thought of. Some things maybe sort of spontaneously emerge. You know, you just sort of, because of something that is going on inside you, you might see someone, you know, carrying a heavy package and hold the door for them or something. Something that just, you know, a very spontaneous gesture of giving or trying to help. So the, you know, the myriad things, I think, can include our vow, but it isn't limited to this or confined by this. We are not the myriad things, but we're part of the myriad things. And so, you know, I think our idea sometimes of vow, it's certainly not always what we think of as our vow, and there's many, you know, I think it's much more far-reaching than that. And so to cling to just this rigid concept and think, okay, this is how I'm going to carry this out, that's maybe the delusion. When we say, okay, I'm in control of this, I'm going to consciously, you know, handle this, that's not always, you know, what's going to work. So that's, I think, So our vow is working on us. Our you know, hopefully, and actually, not just hopefully, I think this is really true for everyone in life, that our deepest aspirations are working there somewhere, even though we're not always maybe immediately aware of it. And, you know, sometimes doing things that seem almost as if they're in opposition to our deepest aspirations. But you know, that's the thing about practice, is it involves just coming and being present with whatever's going on and allowing that to sort of work through us a little bit. So in terms of thinking about, you know, ways that we can work with ourselves and study the self, as Dogen says, and, you know, maybe try to foster some more of this you know, kind of inexpressible thing happening within us, we can think about the other paramitas, actually. That, you know, I think all 10 paramitas are very much contained in each one, in different aspects of each one, but there are a few that I think have a special and particular relationship to vow. The first being patience. You know, if we have made a decision to do something, it is going to require some patience in order to, you know, bring up questions like, you know, when we truly believe in this vow, can we persist in it? How can we persist? Can we tolerate our slip-ups? Can we learn from our slip-ups? Can we learn something about, you know, maybe the nature even of the vow that needs to be worked with a little bit? And maybe in a different way, using skillful means. You know, can we find skillful ways to work with our obstacles? Can we learn to be flexible, you know, maybe with our vow or with patience or other practices? You know, whether that is appropriate and or firm, you know, when necessary. Can we be flexible if we need to? Can we be firm when we have to? Can we apply the paramita of effort? You know, can we be diligent and apply effort and energy to, you know, can we find the effort and energy to bring to something that we've chosen to do? And finally, you know, wisdom or prajna is in terms of thinking about, as we begin to work with a vow or any of these paramitas, is this appropriate? Is this vow appropriate? Is this practice appropriate for where we are right now? When I say appropriate, some of what I mean is this something that we can do at based on where we are in our lives right now? You know, when I was a 12-year-old thinking about I'm going to run every day, I knew nothing about training or, you know, how to sort of run and walk, zip. And the same, you know, sort of the similar thing with practice. I had this idea that, you know, I'm going to suddenly, you know, this is going to be every day and this is going to be my life and it's going to be to the exclusion of everything else. And that is maybe not so skillful and not so appropriate. And that is where wisdom comes in, is, you know, is this practice or whatever it is that I've taken on appropriate for me right now where I am in my life? Another aspect of wisdom might be, is this worth the effort that it will take? Is this true, you know, exploring, is this truly my deepest intention? Can we, you know, learn something from obstacles to our vow? And, you know, what can we learn that might be helpful to us, but also what can we learn that might be helpful to others? You know, when we practice, there are for sure effects on us and intentions of our own, but we're really not just practicing for ourselves. We're really practicing for everyone, for the whole world. And so back to vow. A vow is something that, you know, I think, at least this is true for me, you know, when I undertake it, it feels like a good thing to do. Like, I'm going to do this, right? You know, and I'm on board with it. And yet, you know, it doesn't always feel good, as I've been saying. There, you know, sometimes what comes up pretty quickly is, you know, this is horrible, get me out of here. It doesn't always make us feel good. And, you know, I think even when all else fails, there are times when you can sort of say, okay, well, you know, but I'm doing this, you know, and so you can sort of, you know, make yourself feel good that way. But actually, that's not so much what vow is about. It's really quite irrelevant whether we ultimately like the vow, enjoy the vow. I think, you know, there are ways in which it's not a matter of liking or not liking, you know, and it kind of reminds me of a line from a koan about ordinary mind is the way, where the teacher says the way does not belong to knowing or not knowing. And I think that is a little bit of the sense that I hope to convey about working with a vow, that it's, we don't always know, you know, what we're doing. We don't always know what we're doing every moment. We're not always on board with what we're doing every moment, but there's a way, but we also don't not know. It's not about that, and it's not about feeling good. It's not about liking it. It's not about feeling like, okay, this is a good thing for me to do. It's about continuing and finding small ways to continue. And one of the things that I wanted to read you a little passage from, because this was something that I encountered when I started thinking about what I wanted to say about working with vow. This comes from the book by Katagiri Roshi, You Have to Say Something. And he has a chapter in here, actually, about living in vow. And so bear with me for a moment. He's talking about attending wholeheartedly to the activities of everyday life. That you know, and he's talking about what is the difference between taking a vow and just forming a habit. So he says, we form habits every day, watching TV or not, going to school, going to work. Habits are linked to our desires. If there is no satisfaction in a habit, you won't continue it for long. Living in vow, on the other hand, is to carry out your routines with no sense of attempting to satisfy your individual desires. Under all circumstances, beyond your likes or dislikes, you have to carry on. It's pretty hard, but it's very important. This is the difference between habit and vow. The difference is total. The changes that occur through spiritual practice are not really your business. If you make them your business, you will try to change your life directly. And so this is, you know, kind of carrying ourselves forward and thinking that we are going to change our lives based on our ideas of what we think we should be or what we think we want. If you make them your business, you will try to change your life directly. If you try to change your life directly, no matter how long you work at it, you will not satisfy yourself. So if you truly want to change your life, you should just form the routine of doing small things day by day. Then your life will be changed beyond your expectations. If you practice continuously, day after day, you will become a peaceful, gentle, and harmonious person. There is no explanation for this. Now, so if you wanted an explanation for this, I cannot give it to you. Now, I wanted to qualify this because, let me see if I can go back there, despite dropping the page bookmark. So if you practice continuously day after day, you will become a peaceful, gentle, and harmonious person. That's a wonderful thought. And it's a wonderful transformation. And yet, if we, you know, then hold on to that as like, okay, well, I'm going to practice every day and become a peaceful, gentle, harmonious person, then we lose it, you know? It's like if you try to go towards it, you turn away from it. So that is something that I just want to, you know, sort of qualify by saying that, you know, that is maybe one area where we need to find, you know, what is appropriate for me right now based on, you know, right here where I am. Is this, how can I be skillful with that? How can I find a way to allow that to flourish in my life without, you know, sort of carrying myself forward? And that, I think, really is the, you know, kind of the mystery of each of these paramitas and finding, you know, your own middle way with that. So the last thing I want to talk about is actually the four inconceivable vows, which we will be chanting three times at the end of all of this talking. And, you know, the four inconceivable vows are: beings are numberless, I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. The Buddha way is unsurpassable, I vow to realize it. You know, we chant these every day. What do they really mean? You know, how do we free all beings or end inexhaustible delusions or open every Dharma gate? It just sounds, you know, if you think about it, it sounds exhausting. And, you know, I really don't have the answer to this, but I think that's something that practice is all about, is trying to find, you know, the way that we each can explore or work with these vows. And I would say, you know, that we, in practicing for the whole world, how do we do that in a way that, you know, makes that huge sounding commitment sustainable? You know, and that's where all of the paramitas, I think, come in, and, you know, finding a skillful way to do that, finding patience, finding, you know, our balance with ethical conduct and wisdom and, you know, vow and powers and applying knowledge. So I think, you know, the paramitas have some bearing on, you know, beings are numberless, I vow to free them. You know, how can we engage this being right now in this moment, whether this being is ourselves even, or, you know, our someone else or our idea of someone else. How can we work with this delusion that we're having right now? You know, how can we understand and open this Dharma gate or question or puzzle? And you know, and I think that all of those, each of those practices in every moment is, you know, how do we make the Buddha way real in this moment? You know, how do we make something real by, you know, kind of just the way Katagiri is saying, just taking small actions every day. You know, we can't, I think one of the things I really like about the Inconceivable Vows is that they are so vast and inconceivable, you just sort of are like, you know, it's very clear when, you know, from first thinking about how do I do this, this is not something under my control. This is really not under my conscious control or something that I can do, but it is something that we all are doing together and you know, in all practicing together and practicing for all beings. And I think that is the way that these practices are becoming real and transforming ourselves and transforming, you know, the world.